This is another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
Red Apple Audio Network.
WABC, the biggest all-night show on American radio.
Another Side of Midnight, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222, with John Catsimatidis, the owner of Red Apple Audio Networks, the owner of WABC Radio, the owner of many, many things. And John and I share a passion for UFOs, otherworldly explorations, and this amazing statement that Matt Gaetz, former U.S. Congressman and almost U.S. Attorney General, what he revealed last week. And John and I were like, whoa, 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 this is quite a story. Let me just share with you the first few lines of this story so we're all up to speed. President Trump's first choice for a initial pick for U.S. Attorney General Matt Gaetz has claimed that he was briefed on a secret alien breeding program while he was in office. Gaetz, a former representative, said he was told alien-human hybrids are being created to enable government officials to communicate with beings from other worlds. Well, it seems to me, Mr. Katz, that the only reason, if this is true, the only reason we are trying to create human-alien hybrids is if we know that aliens are here and we have an urgent need to communicate with them. What do you think, Mr. Katz?
Well, I think it's pretty clear they are here. They've been here quite a while. You know, if you go back to the pyramids, you really think the Jewish slaves really built the pyramids?
No.
I mean, my God. I mean, they've been here forever. I think some of them probably helped create us or moved our DNA ahead of us or what we are now. It's really, really scary. And someday, I guess, the truth will come out. I talked to Matt Gaetz for a few seconds, and he wants to come on the show with us and tell us what he knows. And, you know, I told him, you know what I said to him? I said, you got to be careful. I said, look what happened to that Major General. You remember his name? It was about a month ago, wasn't it? About a month ago, that Major General
right.
decided to come to Congress and tell the truth. And he was in charge of the UFO programs. And he had a lot more information to give. And he disappeared. He left, he lived in, where was it, Arizona?
He lived in Arizona. He left home his wallet.
My head is a little, you have to help me.
No, it's all right.
It's a little spinning at 4 o'clock in the morning. He lived in Arizona, and
right.
he left his wallet home.
And his
he left
watch.
His watch home.
Neil.
And he took his gun with him.
He took his service revolver with him. His name was Neil McCasland. Neil McCasland, yes. Major General.
Major General. Two-star general.
Right.
Was in charge of the entire UFO stuff. And then later on, he was found dead. I guess the men in black got him, or whatever the old expression was.
Right. Retired Air Force Major General.
So, you know, I said to Matt Gaetz, because I know him for a long time from the old days. I haven't talked to him in a couple of years. I said to him, you got to be careful what you say. Because you never know what's going to happen, you know?
And what did he say to that?
You know, he didn't answer that yet. And you know who I talk to all the time? The congressman from Tennessee, Tim Burchett.
Right.
Tim Burchett is right on the front on this one item. And he knows a lot of stuff, too. They do exist. You know, all the people that say, ah, that's a lot of hogwash. You know what I referred to them the first time when they say hogwash? I said, go look at the Washington Post in 1952, July of 1952. There were 50 UFOs, front page, circling the Capitol.
Right.
This is 1952.
Right.
There were no drones. There were no drones.
Right.
And supposedly, Eisenhower met with them and made peace with them. And they decided to be a little less obvious.
Sacco and Felix, New York and New Jersey's premier attorneys at law. Their team brings decades of experience across a wide range of practice areas. Whatever life brings, they're your legal team. From everyday matters to complex cases, they've got you covered with the experience you need and the results you want. Because when life gets complicated, they make it simple. SaccoFelix.com. SaccoFillas.com. Two C's, two L's.
Yes, ma'am, the ice cream cake is ready for the birthday boy. On my way. Navigation, what if I stay on this road?
Okay, if you stay on this road, birthday boy will have ice cream soup. Not good for candles.
Are you kidding?
I don't kid. I just route.
Okay, so...
At the next intersection, take the 66 Express outside the Beltway.
All right, ice cream cake arriving on time.
The 66 Express outside the Beltway was expressly built to save you time. Visit Ride66Express.com to plan your trip.
One iced coffee?
99 cents, please.
For real? No way. Mmm. Ah. One iced coffee?
99 cents, please.
For real? No way. Mmm. Ah. What a deal.
Your new morning groove. Iced coffee from McDonald's, any size for just 99 cents till 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
But apparently, yes, go ahead.
But apparently that Eisenhower made a deal. And allegedly the deal was that they'd stop bothering us in public. They'd stop showing up in public, except that that several times a year they would abduct United States citizens, humans, to do experiments with them, return them, but they would take X number of humans a year to do experiments with them. And that what has happened over time is the aliens did not keep their deal. They have taken many, many more humans than they originally promised.
I don't know much about that portion of the conversation, but our technology since 1947, the first crash that we know of, everybody talks about, our technology moved forward at warp speed. And was it you that told me that your father worked for Bell Labs or something?
My dad worked for Bell Labs in the 60s and 70s. And when I was a kid, kids got taken through the labs, and we saw in the early 60s fiber optics, night vision, lasers, incredible audio technology, the picture phone, all of this was sitting there waiting to be deployed. And they weren't going to deploy any of it until they depreciated every foot of copper wire. They couldn't do any of those things until they got to fiber optics. But the fiber optics were there in the early 1960s. One scientist took a 1 foot sample of fiber optics and handed it to me, stuck a flashlight at one end, showed me what the light was like going through it, and I got to take it to my elementary school and show it off. But my dad, his job at Bell Labs was real estate, and he was sent to Roswell a couple times to buy up all the land he could for Bell Labs. So Bell Labs and whatever it is today owns most of Roswell, and he said the reason they told him to buy it made no sense.
America leads the world in medicine development. it matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at AmericaCures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Not sure how to tackle your taxes? Are you sweating the small print? You may be experiencing FOMO, the fear of messing up. The answer? Using TurboTax on Intuit Credit Karma. They help you get your biggest refund, and then we help you do more with it with a personalized plan designed to help you hit your money goals. It's time to take your taxes to the max. Start filing today in the Credit Karma app.
It's cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft, perfectly warm, thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit MinkyCouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet.
Well, the way they kept secrets, the best way they can, is everybody that was involved just knew part of the puzzle.
Right.
Very few people knew all the pieces of the puzzle. And supposedly, this major general that was killed or died knew the entire puzzle.
Knew too much. You're right. He was the one who was in charge of all of these secrets. He was the guy. Now, Mr. Katsimatidis, based on your expertise and your access to the movers and shakers, do you have any sense if and when the rest of us might find out what the deal is?
Well, they're going to try to prevent it as much as possible, no matter how much Donald Trump wants them to do it. One of the reasons, you know, you talked about JFK before.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that JFK was assassinated was he was ready to disclose. Besides other reasons that a lot of people in our government felt that he was dangerous, a problem. And in my opinion, in my gut feeling, I still feel that President Johnson knew all about it. Nothing in Texas happened without Johnson knowing about it. Nothing.
Right. Nothing.
If you wanted to take the crap, he knew about it. I mean, that's the way it was. But that was one of the reasons that I learned. That's why I told Matt Gaetz, whatever you say, use the third parties. I think that's what he said. That's what I said to him to say. I think that's what he said. Don't say, I heard it. We don't need any more deaths.
No. It's interesting that President Trump said, a month ago, six weeks ago, I'm going to announce this, I'm going to reveal everything about the UFOs, and then a few days later, Major General William Neil McCaslin was dead.
Yeah. Let me tell you remember when those things were circling New Jersey?
Yes, the drones that didn't exist, yes.
And what did President Trump say? The minute I get back in the White House, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you why he said that, in my opinion.
Why?
During his last term, Trump 45, I don't think they told him. You know, that's one of the categories in the United States government is a need-to-know basis, even though you are the president.
I agree with you, because I've always felt there were some presidents who were told and others who purposely were not told. I can't imagine what that looks like, how they make that decision, but I've always felt there were some that knew, like Senior Bush, and some who didn't know, like Jimmy Carter.
Don't forget Senior Bush. Senior Bush ran the CIA.
Right.
There was a board of directors of sort of set up by Eisenhower back in the 50s, and that he was one of them. What was it, the Men in 12? I forget it was.
Majestic 12.
Majestic 12. Supposedly they had absolute power.
Right.
On this item that cannot be taken away from them, et cetera, et cetera. But are we going to find out soon? Even if Trump wants to tell us, I don't think he will.
Well, he said he was going to tell us and then quickly never brought it up again. John Katsimatidis is the owner of Red Apple Audio Networks. He's the owner of WABC Radio New York. He happens to be a really good boss, and this is a fun place to work. People view it as a family, and that's all to you. Now we have to hit your ATM, sir, the hard break, and I thank you for being on Another Side of Midnight. Walter M. Serling, Red Apple Audio Networks.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
This is Tosh Plumbey, and you were with the CIA, is that right?
Yes, I was military and then got recruited in from the 4th Army Reserve.
Now, there's a question right there, Tosh. How does it go from being in the military to being recruited into the CIA? How does that happen? What was that process?
Well, what happened in 52 when I was 14 years old, what I did, I sort of run away from home. I wasn't very good in school. So I ended up joining the 49th Army Division, Texas National Guard, at 14. And then I used that to switch into the regular Army when I was 16. And then they found out about my age. I got, into a special unit. At that time, they were doing a similar recruiting for young kids, like juvenile delinquents, and they were putting them in a special type unit, and it was experimental type thing at Fort Bliss, and that's how I got associated with CIA.
So it is true. It's like in the TV shows and the movies that a kid who was a juvenile delinquent gets recruited into crime fighting.
Well, right. And that was based off, they did a movie, The Dirty Dozen or something like that, that was based on World War II when they were taking prisoners out of, out of penitentiaries and then put them into a special unit training in Germany. They used that, started an experimental unit like that in the 50s here in the United States. And they would go into court and, kids that were in trouble, like myself, I was like a juvenile delinquent, wouldn't go to school. And so they felt that, a lot of kids were destined to be in a role, a life of crime and end up in penitentiary. So it'd be better for them to go into the Army. And so that's what happened in my case, as I had a choice to either go to a juvenile jail, so to speak, or go into the Army. And so I chose the Army. As a result of that, then got recruited into a special unit.
Now, tell me about the recruitment process. Did they come to you one day and say, hey, let's buy you lunch and we want to talk to you about a special unit? How does that work?
Well, how it worked in my case at Fort Bliss, I call it the grenade. We were on the grenade range, and we were throwing grenades at a little white post. And my drill instructor, he dropped a grenade in the bunker where me and another guy was throwing our grenades. And so rather than throw the grenade downrange, I picked it up and threw it back at him. it was a practice grenade. Of course, I didn't know that. So as a result, they ended up taking me to the CO, and he wanted to know why I attempted to frag my drill instructor. And so I told him, and of course the CIA was there, CID, not CIA, but CI Criminal Investigation Detachment, was there when I was talking to the CO, because I was, had allegedly was going to frag my drill instructor. And so I told him, I said, well, I wasn't going to give that SOB another chance to throw a grenade at me and my buddy. And so this one guy, he said, well, he said, you got moxie. And so then I told him, I got mad at him because I thought he was accusing me of having a VD or something like that. So as a result, that's what got me in to that attachment. So shortly after that, then I was asked to go to a specialized training program out of Nagshead, North Carolina. And that was the beginning, so.
Robert Tosh Plumney. Robert Tosh Plumney, thank you very much for being here tonight. You have an incredible story of going from being a juvenile delinquent to going to a special unit in the Army. And now, because you're in this special unit, you are asked to participate in one of the most historic, important, and terrifying events of any lifetime. You were asked to go to Dallas in November of 1963, and we need to know what it was you were told you were going there for and what you did. The stage is yours, sir. I want to hear this story.
Okay, well, everything goes back to JFK, and that was, in my opinion, the beginning of a coup. But how I got involved in that was a little bit on the strange side. I wasn't actually assigned to that mission. When I was at Fort Bliss, I ended up using the GI Bill. I ended up getting my pilot's license, got into pilot training, and then later got involved with what they call the Cuban Project. And I was flying arms and ammunition in and out of Cuba. Then Kennedy situation come along, a friend of mine was assigned to that unit, which was the Pentagon had received information that there was supposed to be a hit on the President of the United States. Well, he was assigned to that mission. Basically, they asked me, I was the flight crew. I was the pilot that was flying that crew into Dallas. In other words, that was my mission. I wasn't on the mission to go into.
You were the pilot for the guys who were on that mission, right?
On that mission, right, yeah. And they were dispatched out of the Pentagon with CIA logistical support. So that was their mission. So when I got to Redbird, my friend Sergio, who was a Cuban, he said, do you want to go see the president? And I said, well, hell yeah. So instead of hanging out there at the safe place there at Redbird at the Oak Cliff Country Club, I decided to drive down to the plaza to see the president. So that was my extent. In other words, I wasn't on a mission to go in to stop the hit. I went with them, and then with Sergio, the position was to look for triangulation shooting. So I'm just tagging along. So that was, in other words, over the years, it's got sort of twisted around that I was assigned to go into Dallas to own that particular mission. Well, I was just a co-pilot, actually. I was a co-pilot, that flew in to from Miami to Tampa, and then to New Orleans, and then into Houston, and then into Dallas. And then I was just going to stay at Redbird Airport until the mission was completed or whatever they were doing, and then go back to Miami for debriefing. So, but in the process, that's how I got involved in the JFK thing. So I was there, witnessed the actual event, and saw what happened. And
what did you see? What did happen?
Well, I saw it happen. I mean, just a few feet away. In other words, we had other spotters on the other side, which would be referred to as the north side, and they had radios, but and the north side couldn't communicate with the south side. Because the radio crystals have been changed for some reason.
Oh, wait, so these radios... Wait, this is good. Now, these radios were supposed to be able to communicate people on both sides of where Kennedy's car was. They were supposed to be able to communicate, and suddenly they
right.
could not.
Well, the team that went in could not communicate with the south side of the plaza. The north side, over... Well, there was one of the guys that was on our plane by the name of Gator. He was sitting next to the guy, the umbrella guy, and he kept making a sign on his throat like cut throat, you know. That meant I couldn't communicate.
Now, how many CIA guys were at Dealey Plaza? How many people were stationed there?
I don't really know how many for sure. I mean, over the years, you know, it's like Monday night quarterbacking,
right.
But. In our case, I'm looking at five in our team.
Five.
And five, and possibly maybe another five or six on the other side of the plaza. There's a story there. I mean, of course, where you're on radio, we don't have time to get into all that. But there's a story there about that second team had captured a couple of the shooters. And that's another completely different
story
there. Well,
how many shooters were there?
Well, we were looking for triangulation, which would have been a total of three or possibly four shooters.
Where were the shooters
in
Dealey Plaza?
Okay, on our side, there was one in the parking lot, one on the south side of the triple underpass, and that was on what we call the South Knoll shooters, allegedly. Then on the north side, there was possibly two shooters over there. So we would have had what we were looking for was triangulation, which would have been in the rooftops, maybe one up on one of the Deltex buildings. The school book depository would have been on from one of the floors, but it would have been on top of the building. So all those positions were secure. When we got there, Sergio's position was to secure the south parking lot. So we walked through the south parking lot and didn't see anything at all suspicious, and went over and was sitting in the shade of a tree by some steps, and that's when the shots were fired. So the limousine had come right across, directly across from where we were standing, and I saw the all hell broke loose. So the shooting was, in my opinion, was from the front left south, on the south side, front left by the triple underpass. And that would have been in the south parking lot. That's my feeling. That's what I've testified to, is that a shot went over our left shoulder. And that's the shot that hit the president.
And it came from where?
It came from the south parking lot, the south side of the triple underpass. So if you got a picture of the Dealey Plaza there overhead looking, you can see the south side of the triple underpass. There's a winged out section there as you go into the south parking lot. And we did forensics there at that spot with Sherry Feister, who was a forensic expert, and Jim Mars. And that's where we come up with the south shot that hit the president on the left side, left front, when he had his face turned. So of course, that gets into, you know, conspiracy theory, speculation, and all that. But as far as what we saw, what I saw was that the shot was from the left front. You know, so now,
I got it. Now, the you mentioned the man with the umbrella. Who was the guy with the umbrella?
Well, I don't know the guy with the umbrella. That didn't have anything to, in my opinion,
right,
that didn't have anything to do at all with the assassination. The reason that Gator was sitting next to him is that the guy was close enough to be suspicious. And that's what Gator's position was to do, is to sit there, not take him out. In other words, people over the years have said, oh, there's going to be a shootout. Plumlee said they were there to take him out and so like that. No, that meant just get close to him and break the timing. You know, I mean, we're only looking at seconds. And to break the timing, stop the timing. And look for suspicious people. So that's what Gator had done. And he sat down next to this guy in case he was, some kind of a deal. All this stuff about raising the deal and signaling for a shooter, I mean, that's, in my opinion, that's all BS.
So there So there were three CIA shooters. That's what you're telling us, three. It was triangulated.
I don't know if they were CIA shooters. The crew that we had was dispatched, the CIA logistical support. Now, that was our team that was the team that I flew in with Dallas, and then I went there to observe. I don't know that they were CIA shooters.
Right.
I don't know. I think it was a government hit, for many reasons. But at that point in time, we're not thinking, you know, in those years, the government couldn't do any wrong. Whatever the government said was the gospel. I mean, whatever was printed, I mean, it was truthful. You know, it's not like it is now, you know. But to think that the government would take out Kennedy at that point in time would be ludicrous. That would be crazy thinking. But as time unfolded and decades unfolded and information, then the premise changed and the narrative changed and the speculation and the theories and the conspiracies. And, that's why even today what we're talking about, like I've said in the book, or not in the book, but I could write 1,500 pages and three pages about JFK, and the only interest would be the three pages.
Tosh, what do you think the reason would have been for the government to take him out? Any idea of what the reasoning was?
Well, okay. My consensus, and has been over the years, is two things. It goes back to the national. Okay, Kennedy signed a directive. Now, well, let's see if I can get this down right. The consensus was that Kennedy was killed because he withdrew air cover from the Bay of Pigs. Okay, that's a cover story.
Uh-huh.
The reason that Kennedy was really killed, in my opinion, and the record sort of substantiates this, is because he signed a directive called the National Security NSA NSAM 263, that he was going to remove troops from Vietnam and he wasn't going to put any more men in Vietnam to be killed. And that's one of the things that he was going to do when he came back from Dallas. He signed that directive, okay, and then that directive was overrode by Directive 263 or 273 by LBJ 4 days after Kennedy was killed.
Right.
So the motive there, in my opinion, was over the Vietnam situation, that Kennedy was not going to support Vietnam. After his death, we escalated the fight in Vietnam and put more troops in. So Kennedy was going to pull troops out. Elements within our government said, no, we're going to put troops in. And that led to the killing of a president. That's my take.
Tosh Plumlee, a person who was at Dealey Plaza the day the president of the United States was killed, giving us a unique and powerful perspective on how it was done, why it was done. So thank you for some time talking about your life, your interesting life, and about the death of our great president. Tosh Plumlee on the Red Apple Audio Networks.
Red Apple Audio. UFOs, cults, aliens, societies. Sterling Seafricks.
On WABC, the biggest all-night show on American radio.
Walter M. Sterling with Jake Novak on the Red Apple Audio Networks. Jake Novak, excuse me, top five stories at 5 o'clock. Jake Novak, what do you view as the top two stories at 5 o'clock? Oh, Jake isn't in yet. Hold on. Let me review. Hello, it's 40 minutes past the hour. Yes, I'm a professional host. Don't give me crap. Now, they got the second guy in the shooting of the baby girl in Brooklyn. Do you know this horrible story? There was a baby girl, little kid, and she was in her stroller, and a bullet hit her, and she was killed. You and I can't even imagine that level of horror. We get a panic when our kid has a 100-degree temperature. I didn't say 102. I said 100-degree temperature. We go into panic then. Imagine walking the kid in the day, not at night, not at 2 in the morning, not at Walmart, on the street, and your baby's killed. We'll get details about that from Jake Novak coming up in just seconds. Plus, we'll get the latest on the search for the still-missing crewman in the F-15 drowning that took place, and plus the usual conversation we have with Jake, which is amazing. Here's the details on that story about the baby. 7-month-old shot and killed in Bushwick yesterday. Kid wasn't white, rich, or Jewish. The poor minorities are always the ones who pay. The poor minorities who said we need to defund the police, we need to take away the power of the police, we need to take away bail requirements, minimum sentencing requirements. That's the group of people who seem to get injured the most by less involvement with the police. I have a very different view of the police. I know this will sound strange. My relationship with the police, I believe, is exemplary. And I think it might be an exemplary relationship for most people to have. I'm just saying this is my relationship with the police. I don't have a relationship with the police. That's my relationship. I don't have a relationship with the police. That should be the goal. No relationship with the police. That's it. Kurt in Brooklyn, you're on the Red Apple Audio Network with Walter Sterling. Hello, Kurt. Welcome to the big show. Hi, Kurt.
Yes, sir. With respect to breeding aliens so they can be translators, they would still have to learn the language just like human babies have to. So it's not like it wouldn't be a simple procedure. Just clone them and they can right away translate.
Kurt, you're absolutely right. It's a fascinating premise, and I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. The premise is that right now our government is breeding alien-human hybrids. That's what Matt Gaetz said, alien-human hybrids. And I'm like, well, that means they know there are aliens. We wouldn't be going through all the problems of hybriding somebody unless we knew there were aliens. Ed, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Networks at 800-848-9222. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Walter. Thank you for taking my call. I'm glad to be with such an eclectic audience tonight, John and the other, the pilot. I can't think of his name. Our return in the Artemis is many reasons. We went to space first out of curiosity and fear because of Sputnik revolving around our planet.
Right.
And curiosity, just see what's up there. We're all curious. And now, what if there is something that we haven't seen because the far side, not the dark side of the moon, on the other side? Have civilizations been there? Is there some sort of evidence that there was some sort of humanoid species, that have been pre-existing, and it's out of fear. What are we doing? Why should we, where did these Roswell and stuff like that? What is it all about? And thank you, sir.
No, thank you, sir. I believe there's a lot on the other side of the moon. I believe the moon is not a natural event. I believe it is a satellite all on its own, put there millions of years ago to either be a satellite, a space station for another culture, or to be a monitor for us. That's what I believe. Anthony, welcome to the Red Apple Audio Networks, Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Hi, Anthony.
Thank you, sir, for taking the call. I appreciate Michelle Gibson's report because it just jarred my memory. I'm 66. I went to the World's Fair in Seattle.
Wait a second, Anthony. Hold on. You're 66?
Yes.
You're the youngest listener in my audience. Thank you so much for calling. Anthony, you went to the World's Fair in 66. What was your impression?
Yes. I just graduated kindergarten, so my mom, dad, and my three older brothers and I, we went up to Seattle to the World's Fair. And I think it's kind of ironic. It was the first time I rode an elevator in the Space Needle. So the fact that the term Space Needle was used, I find that ironic. And secondly, inside one of the halls there at the World's Fair, they had this 10-foot structure. It was robotic. And you could climb up from the backside into the very top of the head and operate the controls. So robotics is what I find interesting at that time. And then thirdly, I went to another World's Fair in 1986 in Vancouver, Washington, where they had built the buildings and all that. And at that time, maglev was being introduced as a possible mode of transportation.
What was that? What was it? What was a maglev? What was that?
The maglev is what instead of having subway cars running on wheels, they run on a magnet.
Oh, it floated on magnets. Yes, I remember that, Anthony. Hey, thank you for the call. I really appreciate the call. Thank you very much, Anthony. Coming up in just seconds, Jake Novak. First, let's talk to Lewis. Welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Hi.
Hey, great show, Sterling.
Hey, buddy.
Mr. Sterling.
Thank you, sir.
I just want to tell you that in Cahokia, Illinois, and southern Ohio, there's been exhumations of the mound areas, and they found huge skeletons, and they're tucked away within the Smithsonian Empire.
Oh, Lewis, I totally believe it. Yes, the mounds, I believe the mounds are burials for the giants. I believe there are skeletons in the Smithsonian. People don't make this crap up. Lewis, thank you very much for calling. Another Side of Midnight, Red Apple Audio Networks with Walter Sterling, Jake Novak, premier news executive, premier journalist. A joy to speak with you, sir, an actual broadcaster.
Oh, well, it's always great listening. You know, they pipe in your show into the newsroom, so I can follow along while I'm getting ready, which is nice.
And did you learn anything tonight?
I love the discussion of World's Fair stuff. And for those of you who should, you should all read the book, The Devil in the White City. If you've never read that book, it was a serial killer at the Chicago's World's Fair between the end of the 19th century and going into the 20th century. And that's a great story, especially since my family was in Chicago at the time and visited that World's Fair. So that's a cool story, too.
That is a cool story. Jake Novak, newsman extraordinary, coming up in just seconds, he's going to share with us some of the top stories of the day, including the horrible story about this little kid murdered in Brooklyn with a bullet. That's in just seconds. Walter M. Sterling, Jake Novak, Another Side of Midnight, Red Apple Audio Networks.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
You and I are with Jake Novak, newsman extraordinaire. We're talking about the seven-month-old who was shot and killed in Bushwick, Brooklyn, yesterday. Seven-month-old. And now, what's the latest on this horrible story, Jake?
So there were two people involved in the shooting. The trigger man, the alleged trigger man, they immediately arrested. He was a 21-year-old. Maury Green was his name. And the manhunt was on for a couple days for the person riding the moped. Green was the passenger on the moped shooting the gun. They were looking for the one driving the moped, and they found him in Pennsylvania. A joint U.S. Marshals and NYPD task force found him. His name is Matthew Rodriguez, only 18 years old. Walter, this was all gang-related. The cops believe that these two guys were gunning for this little girl's father who was nearby at the time. So that's the latest on that as far and the shooter, Amori Green, did not have any prior arrests, which is unusual these days. It feels like every crime. But Walter, he's a suspect in a lot of robberies in Brooklyn. These are two gang members operating out of a public housing project. So we don't know yet about whether there's any priors for Rodriguez, especially. And sometimes when they have priors as juveniles, Walter, as you know, they don't reveal that. So it's possible that they both do have prior arrests, but we don't know about Rodriguez at all, the second one. So that just happened a few hours ago.
What do we know about the dad? Why was the dad involved with gang members?
Yeah, well, he's also in a gang. He's a member of a rival gang. So that's what we know about him. You know, the people in the neighborhood, it's really, I wouldn't say it's a nice thing, but it's actually kind of touching. There has been a massive makeshift memorial for the little girl going on right now in Bushwick. Her name, by the way, was Carrie Patterson Moore, and it's growing bigger and bigger. Flowers, teddy bears, the whole thing, pictures. You know, I was talking to former Governor David Patterson, who's a regular contributor here on this channel, on our home channel, on our mothership at WABC, and he and I were talking about, like, if this doesn't lead to some kind of wider discussion of better, more law enforcement, not less, more keeping people behind bars, then what a waste this will be to have a seven-month-old baby shot in her stroller. This should be shocking and should continue to be shocking for as many days as possible to come.
Jake Novak, what is the latest on the search for the missing crewman of the F-15 that went down?
Well, we do have a couple more details. So these F-15s have two crew members. The pilot ejected quickly and, as you know, was rescued relatively quickly. He's in the hospital. I don't think his injuries are tremendously serious. The official title for the second crew member who's still missing is he was the weapons officer. And there are a number of reports right now, not confirmed by the Pentagon, that U.S. Special Forces teams have joined in the search. So that really adds to the urgency here. Clearly now, this is more than just Black Hawk helicopters and the already very extensive, very well-trained search and rescue teams that we have. That's all they do. All they do is train on this. They train on this constantly. They're very good. But for U.S. Special Forces to get involved, that means that, for obvious reasons, the Army does not want, and the Air Force does not want, anyone else to find this second crew member before we do. And they're ready to inflict a lot of pain on anyone else who might be trying to get him. And there's a $60,000 bounty that the Iranian regime has put on this guy. If anyone finds him, if you're an Iranian loyalist to this terrible regime, they're promising you 60 grand. I'd like to see that cash first if I were you. But that's what's so those are some of the latest details there.
Who of the regime is left to actually award anything?
Yeah,
Who's there? Now, listen, you heard this Matt Gaetz story where Matt announced that the government informed him when he was in Congress that there was an alien-human hybrid operation taking place to enable us to communicate better with aliens. How do you feel about this story?
Well, I'd like to be able to communicate better with people from Staten Island, so that would be great. No, just kidding.
That's a reasonable goal.
I think we should start there. No, just joking.
Then you wouldn't get the wrong topping on your pizza.
Yeah. I know I'm going off on a slight tangent, but I used to work at an all-local news station in New York called New York One. And as a joke, they had 5 clocks on in the newsroom, like they used to do in the old days in big newsrooms. They would have New York, Tokyo, Rome, Moscow, obviously with all different times. So as a joke, we had for the 5 boroughs of New York City, we had 5 clocks. So it would say Brooklyn, 5 o'clock, Manhattan, 5 o'clock, Queens, 5 o'clock, the Bronx, 5 o'clock. Staten Island was 4:35.
Very good.
Very good. It was always fun. But no, all kidding aside, look, these are the kinds of things that, I mean, if you're expecting the U.S. government to make a statement about this in response to this, don't. They're not going to say anything. They're not going to confirm or deny any of these reports or any of these claims. I just think... Well, this is what I always say, especially when I listen to your show. It makes me laugh sometimes when you get callers who say, oh, you know, there are no aliens. You understand that there are 1 billion planets in our galaxy and that there are 1 billion galaxies. The chances of there not being any other intelligent life in the universe are zero. There has to be. I mean, this is the best bet I would ever like to take without full confirmation coming yet.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, come on. The numbers are on your side here.
The challenge seems to be, how would they get here? It seems that we're very far away from everything else. And then the other part is, we're assuming we're interesting.
Right. You know, that's another thing I think about all the time. If someone else is visiting us, that means they are so much more advanced than we are that the only analogy I can think of is that we must be like ants to them, like we are to ants. I don't know if we could even communicate with them. We must be so primitive compared to them.
Mr. Novak, coming up in just seconds, Walter M. Sterling, the greatest gift you and I can receive is a request for help. Red Apple Audio Networks.
This is Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
All right, Red Apple Audio Networks, Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Good evening. It's a beautiful night. We're having a great holiday weekend, Passover, Easter. Take it easy. Watch the marathon of Pawn Stars and Storage Wars. Because when men get what they really want, we're left alone. Our dream weekend, it's hard for the family to understand this. Our dream weekend is to be left alone with the air conditioner very cold and watch nonstop Pawn Stars and then argue with the assessment of how much that autograph of the Rolling Stones is worth from 1964. Argue with the autograph expert. And then we switch over to Storage Wars and we watch them open up abandoned storage units, which are usually not abandoned, they couldn't afford it anymore. Every one of those storage units is a tragedy. Those are opened up not because they just left them. Oh, let's abandon the storage unit. No, that's a lifetime of stuff in there. It is a lifetime of attics and basements, and in some cases, retail stores, their inventory, it opens up. They couldn't pay the bill. That's why those are there. That's why they were abandoned. And they open it up and go, oh, my gosh. And then they go through it in the storage compartment. What was in there? What did I buy? Oh, my gosh. And then every one of those clowns on Storage Wars, you know what I'm talking about. Every one of those clowns seems to have an expert on porcelain vases right in town. They're a friend. They're an old friend, my old friend Joe, who can appraise this. And yet, episode after episode, how many times do we watch that? And then if we want to get dark, we watch Hoarders. And last year was the funniest special that they ran on that channel, Holiday Hoarders. No, really. They had people who hoarded holiday decorations, and they turned that into a holiday theme week. Michael in Brooklyn, welcome to Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling at 800-848-9222. Hi.
How you doing, Walter?
I'm excited to talk to you sexually.
You had mentioned earlier about gentlemen going to PTA meetings. I just wanted to say that I was actually the PTA president of my child's school when he was younger. He's older now. And there was really nothing weird about it. I think when you go to PTA meetings, you realize that the PTA has a tough enough time getting anybody to come to the meetings. So if somebody's willing to step up and be the president and direct this group and try to get money together for the school, the parents are pretty excited regardless of their gender.
That's
my experience.
Yes, Michael, that is correct.
It's a positive thing, you know. But I also want to say is that I'm a creative, and it's not bizarre or weird for me to have decorated any of those events either. Just because I'm a man doesn't mean I don't have a touch.
Just because you're a man, it doesn't mean you haven't been touched? Is that what you said?
No, I'm a creative, and I'm able to use those skills, again, for a positive thing at my child's school. There's nothing bizarre or weird about that.
You're right. My point was bigger, which was that if you wanted to stay home and have your wife go to work and support you, and you said, you know, I know you love your job, and I think that's great. You do your job, and you're making enough money that you can support the family. I'm going to quit mine, and I'm going to stay home with the kid. How would that go?
I think in this economy, very few families can afford to have only one working parent. It's impossible. People can't afford rent. The rent in New York City is ridiculous. None of us will ever be able to move out of our apartments into a bigger one, into a small one. We're stuck exactly where we are for life. Forget about the ability to buy a home in this city. It's absolutely impossible.
Well,
no one's really getting the option to be like, well, you know what? I think I'm just going to stay home from work. And you can work and provide for our family, because people can't afford that. One income's not enough.
Yes, that's what trapped our entire culture in 1970 when it became necessary for mom and dad to go to work. But before 1970, it was not necessary. It was frowned upon for mom and dad to go to work. Those were the odd families. Get this. Hold on to this thought, Michael. Until about 1970, most elementary schools in America did not have a cafeteria. That's because the kid walked home for lunch.
Love that.
Michael, thank you very much for calling. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Steve, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how you doing? You mentioned like porn stars. I have the original headband of the Indian from the Village People. Now, do you think Donald Trump would be interested in that, you know, in conjunction with his dance and the Village People song?
Are you asking me, would he be interested in it, or would he be willing to pay for it?
Well, both.
Because really, Steve, what you want to know is, would he be willing to pay for it? Is that right?
Yeah.
What do you think the Village People headband would be worth?
The original one? I have no idea.
Well, I thought you had the original one, didn't you?
I do. I got it out of...
You haven't appraised it? Steve, I'm very disappointed in you. You haven't appraised it? Really?
No. Huh.
I
have a letter of authenticity, you know, from the guy that was in the, you know, the band.
Yeah. I think that if it was really authentic, that those guys who get all sweaty, forgive me for saying that, about the things like that, probably be worth at least $25,000, I'll bet you. And I thank you very much for the call. Walter M. Sterling, it's 12 minutes past the hour, 12 minutes past the hour. It's exciting to be with you, as you can imagine.
On WABC, the biggest all-night show on American radio.
Now, listen to this. President Trump's initial pick to become the U.S. Attorney General, Matt Gaetz. Is that how you say his name? Gaetz? Matt Gaetz. He claims that he was briefed on a secret alien breeding program while he was in office. No, that's what I said. Gaetz, a former representative, said he was told that alien-human hybrids were being created to enable government officials to communicate with beings from another world. Speaking, he says that the prominent the ex-lawmaker revealed that he received the information at his office in Florida in a non-classified setting. Let me repeat this. The man who was originally chosen by the president to be the U.S. Attorney General, Matt Gaetz, was briefed on a secret alien breeding program while he was in office. He was told about a secret alien breeding program. He's a former congressman. He said he was told that alien-human hybrids are being created to enable government officials to communicate with beings from other worlds. Our government, according to Gaetz, was told that alien-human hybrids are being created to enable government officials to communicate with beings from another world. In order for us to communicate with beings from another world, what this is saying is that we need to create alien-human hybrids. Alien-human hybrids are necessary to be translators for you and me to talk to beings from another world. Why would we go through this trouble on a, gee, maybe they're going to come here and maybe we're going to need to speak to them? We're not going to be able to speak to them without these translators, these alien-human hybrids. Alien-human hybrids are going to be necessary for us to translate and to communicate with beings from another world. That means that our government knows there are beings from another world, that the Space Force is a necessary thing. Our government knows, no doubt because they have arrived and have visited us, and then we had a problem. The alien-human hybrids have arrived, and we have a problem, which is that we can't talk to them, and we can't figure out how to translate what they're saying and what we're saying to them. And in order to make this work, we need a translator. And our government, according to Gaetz, is breeding alien-human hybrids right now. We must know so much about the aliens that we know exactly what type of hybrid needs to be created. Exactly what are the specifications, the characteristics of these hybrids, what they have that will enable us to communicate with aliens. That's the only reason that we're creating alien-human hybrids. It isn't to see if we can do it. It isn't because we suspect what's out there. The only way we would go through the incredible challenge of creating an alien-human hybrid is if we know the other half. If we know what the alien is, what they look like, what their DNA is made of, if they have DNA, whatever it is they're made of, we'd have to know what all of that is in order to say, you know what? The only way we can get close to them, have a communication with them, have a relationship with them, have a civilization with these aliens, is if we know everything about them except how to communicate with them. We may know what they look like, what they smell like, or in their case, the human smell, the horror of smelling humans. But this Gaetz guy, who used to be the representative and would have been Pam Bondi, would have been Pam Bondi, except there were a lot of problems with this Gaetz guy. There was a lot of problems with Representative Gaetz relative to being Attorney General of the United States. There were allegations of strippers and all kinds of ugliness that none of us wanted to deal with. And then we got Pam Bondi, who I had. Did you have any problems with Pam Bondi? I had no problems with Pam Bondi. No, I lived in Florida for a year. She was a terrific Attorney General. And then we'll talk more about this, but look at what screwed her up. and look at how many people have been screwed up by exactly the same thing. It's really stunning. But I believe it's true, because otherwise we would not be creating alien-human hybrids. The government would not be wasting its time on a wacky experiment. The only reason the government would do this is if the government said, yes, we have alien hybrids. We have aliens. We have captured them, but we're having a hard time getting along with them. And we believe the best way to communicate with them emotionally, communications-wise, every way necessary, is if we create a hybrid that's half alien, half human. Then we will know how to communicate with them, live with them. And that's what these government officials told Congressman Gaetz, G-A-E-T-Z. Isn't it weird? I don't think I ever heard his name pronounced, but it's Gaetz. It's got to be Gaetz, right? Yeah. Congressman Gaetz was briefed when he was in Congress that the U.S. government is, in fact, creating alien-human hybrids to make it possible for you and me to communicate with them. Whoa! We wouldn't be doing that if we didn't already have the aliens. We wouldn't bother. There'd be no need. We're like, what would we do? Just experimenting to see if we could create things? We didn't need a hobby. We're the United States of America. We didn't need another hobby. But that's what Gaetz is saying. We have aliens. We need to communicate with them. The best way to do that is to create an alien-human hybrid. How do you feel about that? 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. I say it proves the aliens are here. I'm Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Networks.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
Another Side of Midnight, Walter Sterling, and my gosh, look at this, it's Michelle Gibson. Michelle Gibson is an expert on alternative history, and every time I talk to Michelle Gibson, I do not consider it to be alternative history. To me, it's history. These are the facts that have been covered up by conspiracy, by plotting to erase our true history from you and me. And tonight, Michelle wants to talk about the 1851 Crystal Palace Exposition in London, because it ties in a lot of things. And then we're also going to talk about the repopulation, starting with orphan trains, which started in 1854. That's right. They repopulated America on purpose, using, among other things, orphan trains that started in 1854, lasted until 1929. There's a lot of material here. Michelle, the stage is yours. Let's start with the Crystal Palace Exposition. Why should a bunch of hot dog eaters in America care about the Crystal Palace Exposition in 1851?
It's interesting, Walter, because that, for me, marked the kickoff of what I would call the New World Order timeline. There were things going on prior to that exposition, but it was all leading up to what we've been calling a reset of history or a rewrite of history. And it's really interesting because we're educated in our high schools or, the secondary schools about a particular timeline that when you start looking at it, it starts to fall apart. And generations of people were raised on Westerns as being true history. Well, there weren't. But that was how it was presented to us. And that was another part of the cover-up. But the Crystal Palace Exhibition in London took place between May and November of that year. And it was opened by Queen Victoria, and it was said to have been all put together in like a year, around a year, where everything was all built for it. It was built specially for it. It was to highlight all the accomplishments of the British Empire and all the movers and shakers of the day. And they were all in attendance. That particular exposition, which is also we would know of as a World's Fair, brought in a lot of money, kicked off other things like museums over there, that kind of thing. And the people like George Peabody and Samuel Colt with the, you know, the Colt rifles and guns was there. George Peabody was a financier who got his start really in cotton and then went into financing railroads. And he had a big presence there. You know, we ask about who was behind this. You just have to look at the big names. You know, follow the money. Queen Victoria seemed to be a figurehead of this reset, the Victorian era, Victorian style houses, a lot of things happening in the 1840s, 1850s, 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, when all this was going on. And it's really this cover up of a very advanced civilization that we know nothing about. That was the civilization that you're referring to that was removed from our awareness. And it would have stayed hidden, I think, except the internet was made available to us and we could start doing our own research. And a lot of people are doing that. And realizing that what we're told in the narrative just makes no sense. So at the time you're having this Crystal Palace exhibition, so that would have been in 1851. In 1854 was the start of the Orphan Trance, like you said. And that came about through Charles Loring Brace and the Children's Aid Society. And it was supported by people like the wife of William Astor, Carolyn Astor, and other of the elites of New York City at the time, where there was just a huge explosion of orphans, parentless kids, or children with whose parents were inebriated and had been removed from them, and they couldn't function in society. So around the same time all of these things are happening in our narrative, you have all of this alcohol coming in as well. It's like the first thing they did was brew beer and distill hard liquor.
Now, a question here, Michelle Gibson. Question, Michelle Gibson. You repeatedly go back to the theme of the World's Fairs, of the expositions, of the grand government buildings that were not built necessarily in 1850, but were founded in 1850. They were founded. What an interesting word. And you keep comparing the environment, construction capabilities, transportation capabilities, the roads, the sidewalks, to the magnificence of these buildings. Could you explain why that fascinates you, that the dirt roads and the magnificence of these buildings, why is that so interesting to you?
So you can go online and you can look up the Crystal Palace and start there. It's massive, massive infrastructure with train stations, subways, all that kind of thing. And it's just, it doesn't fit what we're told we were capable at that time. So if you look at 1850, 1851, in the narrative we're taught, is still before our American Civil War. And the American Civil War was, you know, pretty low tech. And that's all before the Industrial Revolution. So we're talking pre-Industrial Revolution, basically, in our narrative, with all of this amazing infrastructure that they're building, or that they're telling us they're building. And then, and the Crystal Palace is an example of one that we're told was moved from its original location. So they tell us it was built in a relatively short period of time and that they moved it afterwards and that it was in the 20th century that that's the whole complex actually burned down. So you have inconsistencies in the narrative about who built it, how it was built, how they could have built it, how they could have moved it. And, you know, it really doesn't make any sense. So the 1851 Crystal Palace Exposition was the beginning of about 100 years of these world fairs, exhibitions, and expositions that took place all over the earth. And so you've got them not only in America, in New York, and in Philadelphia, and in Seattle, and Portland. You have it in places like Hanoi and Vietnam. You have Guatemala had a World's Fair. Hobart in Tasmania had a World's Fair. Just to, you know, top my head, New Orleans. And typically the story is they were built for all the buildings that you see when you look them up was built for that event to be temporary. So we're told it's all temporary. But when you see the pictures that exist, and there's still some that exist of these fantastic exhibitions and world fairs, and it's just monumental architecture. We don't build that way now.
Right. There it is. There it is, Michelle.
And then
there it is. We don't build that way now. And you said to me some of these buildings were moved in 1850. They were moved from one place to another for whatever purpose, I don't know. So today we don't build like that. We probably couldn't build like that. And there it is in 1850, surrounded by horses, dirt roads, and hay. How did that happen?
Right. And they don't tell us anything other than we built this, and then we built it to be temporary, and then afterwards most of the buildings were taken down. And that's the story that we get for all of these incredible world's fairs.
Well, why? Well, if they were so spectacular, tell me your theory about why they were all taken down.
Because they either wanted to keep that technology from us, they wanted to use it for themselves, they being whoever's behind this, the deep state, the big names. So you have the House of Saxe, Coburg, and Gotha, which was the name of the House of Windsor prior to 1917 when it was changed to Windsor. You have the Rockefellers, you have the Rothschilds, you have the DuPonts, the Carnegies, the Vanderbilts. All of those names float to the top when you look at who might have been responsible for this. Now, are they the only ones? No, but they're the faces, if you will, of whatever elements came in and did this. And I believe there was a highly sophisticated free energy producing grid that existed worldwide, that our civilization and world was nothing like what we've been told in our history. And 1854 was the year that the orphan trains started. And I was saying earlier, they had this huge population of kids during that time, during the 1850s, and they had to do something with them. So it served several purposes. One was placing out these children, and they sent the first orphan train to Dowagiac in Michigan. It was successful enough that they continued that on, and countless children were sent to places that they'd never been to before with people that would just show up at community centers and theaters in whatever communities that the trains were stopping in. And it's presented as a good thing, but there was no follow-up, no checkup. And that was one of the things happening in the mid-1800s.
And Michelle Gibson, why were those orphans shipped across the country? And are you telling me that the Children's Aid Society was, in fact, an evil organization? It was a way to commoditize children and transport them for profit?
It would appear to be the case.
And how long did that go on?
So that went on from about 1854 to 1929.
Thousands of children.
And, yeah. And, you know, we hear about child trafficking today.
Yeah.
I think that's been going on for a very long time.
And what was the purpose? Why were they doing that?
So there could have been this repopulation effort because what I believe happened was this energy grid was destroyed, and that was what caused what a lot of people are calling the mud flood. You can look back at pictures online again and see cities that are just being dug out of mud, you know, essentially. Kansas City, Missouri comes to mind off the top of my head as one where there's incredible pictures from the 1870s where they're digging the city out. Gary, Indiana is another one that was dug out from sand dunes, basically. And then, like, 1906, they started digging it out. And then by 1908, U.S. Steel was there ready to go. And so part of it was repopulation of people. And then another part of it was, I think, trafficking. And I think the things that we hear about today in the news started during the same time period. So it was a dual purpose.
Got it.
And a lot of things that we are presented to as good, especially in the NGO world, are actually covers for other activities going on.
Now,
there may be good things come out of it, but there's also some things in it that people aren't aware of.
The constructions at the World Expeditions, the World's Fairs, these spectacular buildings that we see today, some places it's government buildings, museums, churches that were built 1840, 1850, or were they built long before that? Are we being misdated? Are we told the wrong dates that these buildings were built? Because they don't say built, they say founded.
Yes, absolutely. That's absolutely correct. They were there long before we're told that they were built. And when I say that people believe that Westerns were real history, what I'm saying is no, they weren't. The Hollywood directors and actors of the day, the Cecil B. DeMilles and John Wayne and Roy Rogers, they were 33rd degree Freemasons, or Shriners. And so I think something infiltrated these Masonic lodges and was part of this cover up of this original civilization and promoting it as we built this. And there's a lot of holes in the story when you start looking into it. And that's what I've been doing for the last 8 years, is just looking into what we're told of these things. And
yes, you have been looking into it. Michelle Gibson, an expert in alternative history. And next time you and I talk, what I want to get into in great detail is who built those buildings, and then why was it necessary to lie and say, we built them? And in many cases, why did they get destroyed so that we could put up really ugly, lousy buildings ever since? It's just amazing to me, with our ability and our money today, the buildings that go up today are just absolute garbage. How do we find you online, Michelle Gibson? How do we find you online?
My website is piercingtheveilofillusion.com, and my YouTube channel is at Michelle Gibson 8946.
Michelle Gibson 8946. Michelle Gibson 8946. That's her YouTube channel. She is a friend of our show. She will be on more often than she wants. And I thank you very much, Michelle Gibson, for being our friend on Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Networks.
Hey, Walter Sterling. This is your cousin Breezy. Listen, I think that it's time that you took a little break. So I'm going to play a song that I actually introduced years ago right here on WABC Radio. So, Walter, hit the trail, and I'll take care of this.
Make it all alone. Remember, no one is big enough to go it alone. Just ask the lonely, they know the hurt and pain of losing a love you can never regain. The young and foolish laugh at love, slowly run away. Confident and sure that fate will bring another love their way. But ask the lonely how vainly a heart can yearn for losing a love that will never return. Just ask why. They'll tell you. They'll tell you a story.
WABC, the biggest all-night show on American radio.
42 past the hour, 42 past the hour, Red Apple Audio Networks, Walter Sterling. Some songs just sound better on AM because they were, in fact, made for AM. You realize the songs like that out of Motown, they were actually produced for the frequency response of AM radio. And when the producers were all done mixing, arguing, fighting, they did one final step. They pumped it through a tiny, cheap transistor radio speaker. They had a little one sitting on top of the control board at every one of those studios, every one of those recording studios, little cheap speaker. And they wanted to know, how was it going to sound on WABC? And then some of them took it to the next step. You see, the program director of ABC, WABC, this station that played all of those songs first, well, that program director had a rule, quote a rule, that he didn't want any songs longer than 2 minutes and 30 seconds. You may find an odd thing on the labels of big hits from the 1960s. You'll see that the song is 2 minutes 42, 2 minutes 51, but the label says 2:30. It says 2:30. And then you time it yourself, you go, it's 2 minutes 51 seconds. But you see, the program director of WABC at that time,
on WABC, the biggest all-night show on American radio,
would not play a song if it was longer than 2. He wouldn't even listen to it. If the label said something longer than 2:30, he wouldn't even listen. And then to get around it, they just said it was 2:30. Walter M. Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Networks. Good evening. My phone number is 800-848-9222. For 50 years, there's been endless debate about how was Kennedy killed? And then it seems that when all the secret papers were released by our great president, it didn't solve any problems. I have an expert from the CIA coming up who's going to share his belief, his knowledge, that there were three government shooters in Dealey Plaza that day. And he was an expert. 800-848-9222. Steve, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Steve, it's exciting for you to be here, as you can imagine.
Yes, it is. Walter, have a good day, because I just heard Michelle talk about the expositions. Oh, I've got plenty on that. I researched the Salt Lake Exposition of the 1870s. It is wiped, totally wiped from the internet. Now, you can't
Steve, here's what I'd like you to do for me. I'd like you to start from scratch and tell the story the right way. Tell us what the Salt Lake Exposition was, when it was,
okay,
what was featured, and then why you think it was wiped. Go.
Okay. The Salt Lake Exposition is essentially a World's Fair, and it's represented on the internet as, if it was, it's Saltaire. Saltaire is the 10-mile run between Salt Lake City and the Great Salt Lake. It's not Saltaire. It is downtown Salt Lake City, six blocks from Temple Square. And it is well documented. It was well documented. Hundreds of pictures, no construction pictures for some reason, no demolition pictures either. It was on the site of Carl Malone's Honda and Mercedes dealership in Salt Lake City. It is now gone. He doesn't have a dealership there anymore. I actually spoke with him and he said, yeah, we have a placard. And I walked over. And yes, there's a placard there. So maybe they took away the placard too. But again, this links into Queen Victoria, who is, shall I say, I'm going to be cautious about this, very related to Utah and the Mormons. And by the way, this is April 6th. This is Mormon Christmas. Mormon Christmas is April 6th. The grass was still green when Jesus was born. So we celebrate two Christmases in the Mormon
Church.
But
Steve,
yes, go ahead.
So this exhibition was there. It was founded.
Yes.
It was built hundreds of years before they say it was. They repurposed it to say, this is a fair. We just built it. Why did they take it down?
Good question, Walter. The buildings were there. Everything was there. And they have pictures of mountains with little log cabins, and they have a great temple. It makes no sense. But Michelle is exactly right. And the linkage to Queen Victoria is definitely, definitely there. And
Yeah, I believe that, Steve. And I really appreciate your call. Thank you very much. The story is this, that these great exhibitions that you and I heard about in the 1890s, these beautiful things that all look like Penn Station, these grand buildings, like, wait a minute, what do you mean these grand buildings? There were dirt roads. There were no motorized anythings to build these things. They're built in the middle of nowhere. And rather than reconstructing them, we probably just found them. And then when we said, oh, it's a World's Fair, come to it. It's only going to be open for 2 or 3 years. We'd come. And then at the end of the World's Fair, they, and you know who they are, had the excuse to tear it down because they didn't want that culture, architecture, or technology, free energy, to continue. And in order for it to not continue, they had to tear down the best examples. That's the theory here. That's the deal with the exhibitions. Walter M. Sterling, Another Side of Midnight. How many sides are there? How many sides? Red Apple Audio Networks.
It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. It's Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's Walter Sterling.
Red Apple Audio Network's Another Side of Midnight. I got a phone number. It is 800-848-9222. It's just us. You and I in the 18-wheeler, the 4-wheeler. Here I am a couple inches from the microphone. You're a couple inches from the speaker where you got those ear pods. Those ear pods, which will drive me insane. The hardest thing about the living with ear pods, I don't use them, and I'm not going to use them. The hardest thing about living with them is I don't know if somebody in my home is wearing them. Do I? I don't know. And then I start a conversation like I do with you, and they're staring around, looking around, then I realize they have the AirPods in. And then I'm a little annoyed. And then I start talking again so they can hear me. And they say, why are you mad at me? Why are you mad at me? I'm not mad at you. I'm just speaking louder so you can hear me. Why are you shouting? Because you have ear pods in that are probably up pretty loud listening to music that I probably don't like. Or worse, you're listening to a podcast about true crime, which is never about true crime. It's never about what really happened at the Green River in Georgia, and it's always at the Green River in Georgia, on National Public Radio, where we speak like this, and we speak like this. And then I'll tell you a secret about National Public Radio. If you were to take a tour, this is true a few years ago, if you were to take a tour of National Public Radio in Washington, D.C., God help you, first of all, we couldn't be friends from that point on. But if you did, they would say to you, no cameras. And at first you'd be like, you know, what is secure at National Public Radio? It's on the air. Whatever it is on the air. There can't be any secrets. And they would say to you, no cameras, please. They say that because they don't want their affiliate stations to see the kind of equipment they have. Because they don't have Cadillac equipment. They don't have Mercedes equipment. They have Rolls-Royce equipment at National Public Radio. Mark, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Red Apple Audio Networks, Walter yeah. Sterling. Good evening, sir.
I have a CD collection. One of the songs on it is Chai Coltrane's Thunder and Lightning, and each song has a liner note that goes with it, and Thunder and Lightning was released in the late summer, early fall, 1973. And the liner notes says that the original length of that song was 3 minutes and 2 seconds. And in order to get it down for airplay, the engineers at her recording company decided to speed it up just a little bit. And they got it to 2 minutes and 58 seconds. And if you listen to both versions, you'll find that they are slightly off pitch from one another, just to shave 4 seconds off and make it suitable for airplay.
You know, Mark, you know what's scary, and this is scary. You're right, and the reason I know you're right is in my head is the two different versions, because I'm a radio guy, and I'd hear that. I would hear that, and I didn't know if we were doing it at a station. But now thank you for clearing it up and explaining that's how it was done. It's just, and then many radio stations, including WABC, would speed up the records. And then when you'd get it home and you'd listen to it and go, why does this sound so different? It does sound so different. Hey, Mark, you're a good guy. Thank you very much for listening to Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Networks. Let's see here, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. There are so many things that we're working with tonight. Former Congressman Gaetz announced recently, this week, that the U.S. government told him that the government is experimenting with human-alien hybrids. creating human-alien hybrids. Why are we doing that? Because it is believed that if we have a human-alien hybrid, we will be able to communicate with the aliens better. The only reason we would be doing that, Congressman Gatz, the only reason we would be doing that is if we, in fact, had aliens and knew aliens existed and could clone aliens. We could take the DNA and make it. That's the only way we could make half-human, half-alien hybrids. That's the only reason there'd be a need for half-human, half-alien hybrids, is if they're already here. If they're already here. And I believe they are. I believe they've been here long before Roswell. Roswell was, somebody crashed a plane and people got confused. No, I believe the aliens have been here forever. I believe that the Anunnaki were aliens and that we have been part of a breeding experiment for millions of years. That's what I believe. Now, our government is making it sort of official by saying that we have to create human-alien hybrids in order to communicate with aliens. Then, the never-ending saga of the Kennedy assassination, I'm going to share with you in just a few seconds a conversation that you and I are going to have with Tosh Plumlee. I don't know why I have trouble pronouncing easy names. Tosh Plumlee. He was in the CIA. He was in the CIA in the late 50s and early 60s. He was recruited into the CIA from the Army. And they recruited him because he had been a juvenile delinquent. And just like in the movies, yeah, they really did take juvenile delinquents and say, well, you can go to jail or you can be in the CIA. You can go to jail or be in the CIA. He was in the CIA, and he was in Dallas when Kennedy was shot, and he was there to keep an eye on 1, 2, 3 shooters that they knew about. Walter M. Sterling coming up in just seconds, Another Side of Midnight, Red Apple Audio Networks.
Listen to this podcast now on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Why is the middle class shrinking? Why are people facing an affordability crisis while marginalized individuals called informals grow in numbers? Join me as I travel the world, speaking with people living in invisibility, the leaders working to solve it, and uncovering the hard truths shaping our economy and daily reality.
Download all of Red Apple Media's podcasts right now through your favorite podcast platform.